Okay, so if you were here a few months ago, I've started sort of trying to analyze different issues on social media from halachic perspective. So I gave a shir at the time about the Shechianu versus the bracha of Mechaya Mesim, noting that social media affects our lives at in two different ways. One is in terms of sheer informational level, and the other is an emotional level. Noted that according to many poskim, that would be the line between Shechianu and Mechaya Mesim, where Mechaya Mesim is a bracha that we make when you think someone actually died or you lost contact with them for a year, which in the world of social media is very unlikely. And we saw that certain poskim said, you know, in the world of, and this was before social media, but it's true even more so, that if you don't hear anything about somebody who you have a relationship with, that presumably means everything is fine, right? I mean, I get emails from the rabbinic listserv, like the rabbinic alumni, whatever, from YU, of any death, of any relative, of any musmach in YU ever, right? So, like, if I haven't heard your name in a while, it's probably either I didn't pay attention, but I usually at least skim the you know, condolence emails. That means probably not only are you okay, but any of your Shiva Krov, all your Shiva Krovim are okay, right? And even... What?
How many emails do you get from those people?
What? I get a lot, because YU is the oldest yeshiva in America, right? Started in the 1880s. So, like, it'll be like the father of such and such who got smicha in 1955. His father is probably of, you know... So we saw a poskim who said that, so therefore, bracha mechaya meisim, you wouldn't say. But we saw a poskim who said that's not true, shechayanu, because shechayanu is a bracha that you make on the joy of seeing somebody who you're close to. And just because you've seen them right every morning, I'm having pancakes for breakfast, I'm having cereal for breakfast, yay, selfie, right? That doesn't mean, I mean, that you may never want to see the person again, it's not the point. But that still doesn't diminish the joy of actually seeing them in person. So as part of my sort of my ongoing thinking about these issues, I wanted to take a different aspect of it, and that's social media shaming. And I don't mean this just like, I mean, I'll start with some sort of classic sources about, you know, don't embarrass people and stuff like that, but I mean this in serious ways. I don't just mean like calling people, you know, like embarrassing people for fun, right? That obviously is usher. But there was a psak for the first time last year, 2 years ago already, where the Haifa Bet Din officially said about someone who was being Masari of Get, right, who was refusing to give his wife a get, that he should be publicly shamed, and included among the things social media shaming, right? They felt that was part of the halachic response that was available at their disposal, was to encourage social media shaming. So I mean this even in a constructive way. What I want to talk about is a little bit about where this might come from. Someone else asked me, you know, about the Me Too phenomenon, which is a similar phenomenon to think about, right? Is there halachic language to talk about it? So that's what I want to try to analyze a little bit. I think there are basically two main issues you've got to deal with first. Obviously, one is the problem with shaming people. You can take donuts, you can take muffins, you can take coffee, you can take whatever. We're making everybody jealous who's listening online. No, anyways. But there are two main halachic issues, I think, that you have to contend with before we get to why it would be okay, right? There are two main reasons why we should avoid shaming. And those, I think, again, this doesn't take big chachma. One is the prohibition against embarrassing people, which is a subset, really, of onat dvarim, right? Onat dvarim, you can't cause anybody pain verbally, and the worst subset of that... possibly a subset of that, possibly related prohibition, without getting to all the technical lumdos here. But you can't cause people pain emotionally, and for sure you can't embarrass them. Where do we get this from? So I gave you number one. Right? Don't hate your brother in your heart. Give him, rebuke him, and don't incur no guilt because of him. And Rashi notes from the Gemara in Erechen, I just gave you Rashi because it's simpler, Rashi says, what does it mean, don't, lo tisal avcheit, right, don't bear guilt because of him? And it means that even when you're giving someone tochacha, it's legitimate, you should avoid embarrassing him. Because that is very bad. Right? That's why he says, "Lo talbin et panav birabim." Don't embarrass him publicly. Right? Don't. Why do we say talbin? Because it causes, right, his face becomes white, becomes pale. Fine. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells you, number three, that Elazar Hamodai Omer Hamachalas Hakadshim Vamevazes Hamoados, that someone who profanes, right, things which are sacred or desecrates the holidays, Vamalbin Pnei Chaver Berabim, or someone who embarrasses people publicly, Vamefer Britoshel Avram Avinu, or someone who nullifies the covenant of Avram Avinu, which means what?
Not getting a
circumcision. So it might mean not getting, but it might even mean worse than that. There was a practice in the Roman period of actually undoing the bris. That if you had a bris, trying to recreate an arla, right, sometimes entailed very painful procedures of hanging weights from that part of your body until it would sort of stretch the skin. But actively being mefer brit. So this is like a really bad thing, right? Even someone who has a brit, to go out of his way to make it look as if he didn't, right? That is put on the level of someone who embarrasses someone publicly. Right, v'amigaleh panim b'tarash al kalacha, or reveals meanings of the Torah that are contrary to the law. These are bad things. Afal pishish b'viado Torah umasim tovim. Even though if he has good deeds, he has Torah ein lo chelek leolam haba. Right, he has no portion of the world to come. And it may even be worse than that. The Gemara in Sota, in the context, and this Gemara appears also in Brachot Mem Gimel. It appears in Bava Mitzi as well, in the middle of the Onat Dvarim sugya, says that not only is it bad to embarrass people, but commenting on the story of Yehuda and Tamar, where Tamar is being brought out to be killed because, right, let's review our Chumash here, right? Right, Yehuda has three sons. His, right, heir, Onan Shelah, heir, dies, so because he's not a good person, therefore his brother does Yibum and marries his wife Tamar. He doesn't want to carry on his brother's legacy, so he doesn't consummate his sexual acts with Tamar so that he won't have children, which will then be called in his brother's name. So God kills him too. Tamar sits around, waits around, wants to marry Shelah. Yehuda doesn't want her to marry Shelah. At some point she realizes that Yehuda is just stalling for time, so she dresses up as a prostitute, seduces Yehuda, takes as collateral his staff and his signet ring and his cloak, and then when Yehuda sends his messenger to pay the bill to the prostitute and get it back, she's disappeared. In the meantime, she, a few months later, everyone realizes that she's pregnant, realizes that this is quasi or whatever adultery, without getting to the nuances of Yibum. She's going out to be killed, and she sends a private message to Yehuda and says, "The person to whom these belong, that person has fathered the child." And Yehuda realizes that it's him. Now Chazal pick up on the fact that she didn't publicly say, "It was Yehuda, I don't have to get killed." Right? She seems to have put the ball in his court, right? Giving him the ability to deny it. So, commenting on that, Chazal says, she sent to her father-in-law saying, "To the men whose these are, am I with a child?" Right? He fathered this. Right, Meimar, why didn't she just say, right, just say it was you? It's not adultery, it's you, man, right? You are the father, and you are one of the people going to fulfill Yibum. Just save your life. So, Amar Zutra Bartovia, Amar Rava, Amri La, Amar Bchana, Barbizna, Amar Shimon Chasida, Varmi La, Amar Yochan, Mishim, Yerushim, Bayochai. Somebody said, Noach Lala Adam, Sheyapil Atzma Lotoch, Kivshan Ha'esh, Val Yabin Pnei Chavayro. Birabin, minalan, mitamar. It's better to throw yourself into a fiery furnace than embarrass someone publicly. And how do we know? From Tamar. Does that mean that embarrassing someone is Yaharig Valiavor? What's the problem saying it is Yaharig Valiavor? It's not listed in the big three, right? Not in the Gemara Sanhedrin, not in the Gemara Yivama, not in the Gemara Yoma, nowhere, right, where it's mentioned, nowhere is it mentioned as one of the big three. Does that mean it's not Yaharig Valiavor? I would have said, obviously, it's not Yaharig Valiavor. But Tosvos and Rabbeinu Yona both say it is Yaharig Valiavor. Aye, how is it Yaharig Valiavor? Not listed in the big three of murder, right? Incest / adultery or idolatry. So Tosa says, "V'nir dehayd lo chashiv lebahadei shalosh averos she'inam demnei v'guach nefesh avodas gechavim gilei arash v'chos damim." Why isn't it listed in the three? Not because it isn't one of them. It is. Mishum daveros albanas panim inam furashes b'torah v'lo nakad el averos amafurashes. It's not explicitly in the Torah, and the list of three is three things that are explicit in the Torah. But this is number four, which is actually a Harig Valley Yavar, right? Embarrassing someone in public is actually, right? right, carries with it the death penalty. Well, not the death penalty, but carries with, you know, it's, you should rather die than do it. Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, number 6, says, yeah, it's Yargal Yavar, Halbona hi tolada saritzicha. Why isn't it listed? It is listed. It's a subset of murder. Right? It is one of the Abu Zrayu, one of the branches of murder, and is Yaharig Val Yavar. On the other hand, the Rivash says, I don't know what you're talking about. The Rivash says, Velo Amru Bo Sheharig Val Yavar, Kagon Osan Shalosh Averos, Vizelo Ola Al Das Shum, Adam Velo Chashav Enosh. He said, no one ever thought this. No one has ever thought this. Let no person say this. El Shadera Chachomim Lahaflik Vahagdala Zavanos Chazal. Exaggerate sin, kadesh yisham adam ikashul behen, so people won't violate them. It's called hyperbole. It's called hyperbole.
But we still see that it's better to do it than to.
Okay, so I didn't give you all the sources, but I'll give you a quick rundown of it. So, and then the Meiri also says, the Meiri in Brachos Mem Gimel says that it's just derech malitza, it's just an expression. But as the Rivash and the Meiri both point out, why do you speak in such hyperbole? To emphasize this is really, really bad. So whether or not it's Yehard Gval Yavur, it's really, really, really bad, such that we can talk this way. Embarrassing people is bad. Some of the Achronim say, well, it depends. Tosfos, in several places in Shas, has a position that the big, right, when we say that there are three Avera, which are Yehard Gval Yavur, that can mean one of two things. That can either mean there are three Avera you are allowed to give up your life for, allowed to and have to, and the other 610 you're not allowed to, or there are three you have to, and 610 you're allowed to if you want, right? The Rambam takes the former position, right? You're only allowed to give up your life for the big three. The other 610 you're not allowed to, and if you do, I raise a mischayev benafsha, right? The Rambam in the fifth paragraph of Sudiyat Torah, but
it's too late.
Fine, but meaning you're culpable for the fact that you died. It's your fault. You shouldn't have done that. Right? That's the position of the Rambam. Tosfos says no. Three which you have to. 610, which you're allowed to. So several of the Achronim say that the only reason Tosfos says it's Yehard Gval Yavor is not because it's actually Chayiv. What they're telling you is since you're always allowed to make that decision if you want to, in this case, we would encourage you to make that decision. You don't have to, but you could, right? Or you should, right? So it would say it slightly soften Tosfos, but still be pretty bad. Other people also, but Rishlomo Zalman Orbach, like 20th century major posek, says it is Yehard Gval Yavor. Period. End of story. And he even has a whole deon of what if someone's running after someone to embarrass him? Should you be able to kill him, right? Like a rodeif? Or what about on Shabbos? Can you be Mechal Shabbos to prevent someone from being embarrassed because it's like murder? He's this whole like long tshuva. He takes this very seriously. B'nai Bonim, Rav Henkin, goes through. Basically, Shlomo Zalman says, look, I understand Meiri says it's not. But Tosfos, Rabbeinu Yonah, right? Tosfos, Rabbeinu Yonah versus Meiri, who am I going to listen to? Tosfos. So it's halacha. So Rav Henkin just lists in B'nai Bonim all the Rishonim who say this isn't literal. It's not Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yonah against Meiri. It's here's a list of 100 different people who say that it's not Yehard Gval Yavor. Fine. I'm not saying it's Yehard Gval Yavor. But it's really bad, right? It's very, very bad. So that's a Vera 1 you've got to contend with, which is a serious, serious issue. Number 2 is the whole rubric of Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, Rechilos, all that stuff, right? All that stuff, right? Which, I don't really need to give you all the sources on it. Lashon Hara is one of the things people talk about constantly. But I gave you the Rambam, right? In number 9, Hamiraga b'chavera over below zase. Right? If you bear tales against someone, you violate a law. Shene amar lo seilach rachil b'amecha. Right? You shall not be a tailmonger, tailbearer. A gossip monger. V'avu b'shen alokin al davar zeh. Even though you don't get malchus for this, you don't get lashes. Davar, right? Avon gadol hu. It is a terrible sin. V'gorim l'harog nefashos rabos m'Yisrael. It causes many people to die. L'kach nismachlo v'lo samad al dam reyecha. And that's why it's put next to l'samad reyecha. Tzei ulamad ma'ir l'doeg ha'adomi. Go look at the story of Doeg Ha'adomi. What's the story of Doeg Ha'adomi?
He told about no.
Good, exactly right. Shaul, David ran to the Yerkoanim of Nov. He doesn't tell them he's running away from Shaul. He comes in, says, can I have some food? Do you have some weapons for me? Say, hey, here, it's... Right. Yes, exactly. You have here's Goliath's sword, right? This is very, again, you know, I don't know if people at Byte have seen, I'm giving, you know, I'm giving in Lord of the Rings and Terra in a few weeks. But there's that, you know, it's a very Lord of the Rings moment, right? Like Elrond shows up with the flame of the West, you know, reforged from Narsil, you know, Isildur's sword, right? It's a very Goliath, right? Here, I only have one sword. It's the one you used to kill Goliath. Okay, which is his own sword. Yeah, very exciting. And then, you know, Doeg tells Shaul and they kill the whole city. Not so happy. Okay, fine. End of bad story. Bad story.
Not the same ending.
Not Bechal, no. Right.
I need Gandalf.
You do, Shmuel. Okay, long story. Anyways. Right? And whether you say Lashon Hara in front of him or not, he caused something, pain, damage, etc., that is usher. Great. Now, we all know that there are exceptions to Lashon Hara, right? And let me give you all the exceptions. But, right, what exceptions are to Lashon Hara? I didn't put it here. Right, so the Chafetz Chaim says toelet, right? Things that are beneficial to Lashon Hara. Now, the Chafetz Chaim himself lines up 7 different conditions that you need in order for something to be considered Lashon Hara toelet, right? You need to personally ascertain that it is true. Okay, right? You've got to personally, you've got to prove that it's true. You need to have pure intent, right? It needs to be that there's no other way to accomplish what you want to accomplish other than publicizing. It has to be that the consequences to the person are not going to be worse than what they would have gotten in Beis Din. Right? He just goes, right, for each condition. Many poskim say no, that's not true. You don't need that. It's much looser because it's not, they don't have this principle of toelet. They just assume that Lashon Hara that's for beneficial purposes is not even in the category of Lashon Hara. That's a shear for another time to get into the specifics of why it's mutter or when it's mutter. But the two, I think, major prohibitions you have to deal with are, right, embarrassing people publicly and Lashon Hara in all its forms. Lashon Hara, Motzi Shem Ra, etc. The problem, right? On the other hand, right? Halacha is very aware of the power of publicizing, right? And it is often used, it is often weaponized, right? To use sort of a striking term. But it's weaponized in halacha when necessary. For example, look at 10, right? Who the first person to weaponize, the first to weaponize Lashon Hara in the Torah is God, right? God weaponizes, right? Weaponizes information, specifically against Miriam. For having spoke in Lashon Hara, the Torah then forever records her crime, and not only records her crime, instructs everyone to remember her crime so that nobody will ever do it, right? The Torah itself weaponizes it. And you look at it, right? The Rambam records this for you in Hilchos Tzarah. Val inyan zem mazir batara v'omer yishar mer b'negat tzarah. Right? In order to get you not to speak Lashon Hara, what it does is it tells you, keep away from tzarah. And zachor et asher asa asher melokechel Miriam baderech. We forever have to remember that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara and was punished for it so that we won't do it. Meaning, it's the irony, but I think intentional irony of God, right? Okay, according to Ramban, this is one of the 6 things you have to say every day. It's like, you can't forget that she did something wrong. She made a mistake. The mistake was that she spoke about other people. So speak about her. Because it's a powerful tool. Right? And God uses it. Areu Omer, Hid Bonenu, Ma'e Ra'le Miriam. God is telling you, remember, pay attention, what she did. She spoke against her brother who was greater than her. Bishanim, right? She was older than he was. She raised him. She risked her life to save him. She didn't even do it intentionally, right? She made a mistake that he was equal to other prophets. He didn't even care. Right? Well, the af al pi chen mian en shabbat sarat. And despite that, she gets sarat immediately. Kal vachomer v'nei adam reshaim atipshim shemarbim ledaber gdolot neflaot. So kal vachomer to those idiots who just talk. Lefichach ra'ui l'misha rotzeh l'chaven or chotav l'trachek v'shivatan ledaber imahen kedei shel itapes adam reshet reshaim v'sichutam. Right, so you should steer your life in the right course, not be caught up with evil and arrogant men, etc. Right? The Torah itself understands that it's very nice to say you can't speak badly, but under certain circumstances, it's necessary, right? That's just, right, sort of a general point. But tachlis, okay, halachically, how does that play out? So again, I could go through all types of things. I could start talking bet toelet. But I want to talk, right, I want to take the example of the Chaifa Psak. I think Baruch wasn't here yet, but the Chaifa Psak, right, that encouraged formally using social media shaming to give, force someone to give a get to his wife who didn't want to give his get to solve an Igun problem. Where does that notion come from, right? Now, we could go into Toelet, but the truth is it's much easier, and it goes like this, right? Shulchan Aruch tells you as follows in 11. Ketzad mazminim baal din ledin, right? How do you summon someone to court? So shalchim lo beidin, shluchim, sheyavo liyoma mizuman. We invite someone, we send a formal summons to court on such and such a day, ledin, lo ba, if he doesn't show up, mazmin to pam shenit, if it doesn't happen, we invite him a second time. Lo ba, he doesn't come a third time, mazmin to pam shlishi, he doesn't come, we invite him a third time, we summon him a third time. Lo ba, if he doesn't come, mamdin lo kol hayom, if he doesn't come by the end of the day, min nadinoto, we excommunicate him. Right, we excommunicate him. Right, and the halacha is that if someone is called to Beis Din and refuses to show up, so after again three times summoning him to court, we put him in cheirum. What does right now? This is the mechanism of right that we use for someone who doesn't want to give his wife a get. Right, we summon him to Beis Din. If he doesn't do it three times, we put him in cheirum. What does cheirum entail? So look at 12. The Rambam tells you, right, summary of it. What do we do with the person who is in, right, who is excommunicated? Minude asur l'saper. He can't cut his hair. L'saper, kavel, calling me nidiyav. He isn't allowed to shave. He isn't allowed to bathe. Ein mazminin alav, right? Ein mezamnin alav. He isn't part of zimun, right? You're benching together. He can't be part of it. Lo kolon oto basara, lo chol davar, shetar chasara. He doesn't count for a minion. Lo yoshvini ma barba amot. Right, we don't sit within four amot of him. Aval shoneu la'achirim, shoneu lovin isgarvus imcher. Right, at the earlier stages of nidui, right, it gets worse. But he can teach others. He can do a little bit of. He can hire him. The maid benudav beidin shalchinu manichin even al rono. And even if he dies in nidui, we put a rock on his coffin, klomar shein rog minoto, as a form of stoning him. Right, she. Lefishu muvdam in the tibur, because he's separated from the tibur. Beinzar klomar shein misaprinoto. We don't eulogize him. We don't mourn him. Right? We don't eulogize him. We don't escort his coffin. And this keeps going. Right? This is nidui is like the lowest of the levels, but the later levels you can't talk to him. Right? Meaning, at Beis Din's disposal are these levels of excommunication. Now, obviously, that entailed public humiliation, because you had to tell everybody who this was, and you had to institute these, right, these mechanisms. And public shaming and excommunication and what is part and parcel of the halachic system. I gave you in 13, the less of the sources come from this article that was published just recently in the fall of 2017 by Tzuriel Rashi and Hananel Rosenberg. I don't know who Hananel Rosenberg is, but I know Tzuriel Rashi is. He's a professor of media and halacha at Bar Ilan and at Machon Herzog. And he goes through the history of shaming in halacha as a halachic mechanism. So here in the beginning of 13. So we just right, we saw the beginning of cheirum, and he says, so another form, right, shaming as communal pressure, excommunication. He says another form of shaming was used to pressure someone who refused to conform to the community's code of behavior or to bow to the authority of the communal institutions. Now again, on the level of lashon hara, how do you solve this? So you come up, however you solve toelet, you solve it here, right? But what I wanted to do here was not to just prove that it theoretically can be mutter. I wanted to show you what this looked like halachically, right? Meaning how social media shaming as a weapon or in the arsenal of Beis Din is not new. It's not just it's mutter because it is toelet, right? This is what we do. So he said, the most striking of this was undoubtedly cheirum, excommunication, which was the public denunciation of a member of the community and his expulsion from the social circle. The punishment was common from ancient times, as there is evidence that it was used among the Dead Sea sects. There were two steps in the excommunication process amongst Jewish communities in the Middle Ages. First was the announcement of the intent to excommunicate, and two was the act of excommunication itself, which involved declaring that of a person who was no longer considered a member of the community, and a prohibition on joining him in prayer, sitting near him, or speaking to him, etc. Excommunication was rare, and European rabbis resorted to it as seldom as possible. In general, when it was used, it was with the agreement of the community. The rabbi would announce the excommunication in the synagogue, taking out the Torah scrolls with a public proclamation of the sin for which the individual is being expelled from the community. Right? When we did this right. Right? We did it in shul, right? The Sifrei Torah out. And on Shabbos, we told everybody, right? We didn't try to make it private. Lashon Hara, judge him favorably. No, once we got to that point, right? Once it is formally decided that he gets Kherim, all those boxes have been checked off. It's Latoelet, call it whatever you want. But now we did it, and we did it publicly as possible to use pressure. And he continues, he notes, that it's not just Kherim, right? We were creative. Jews were very creative. We used public shaming in all types of interesting ways. So sometimes we used it as communication, but he said sometimes we used it straight as punishment. So for example, like the legal institution that surrounded Jewish communities in the Middle Ages, also made use of shaming as a punishment for criminals and sinners. So for example, those who departed from the straight and narrow of communal norms and were caught in the sin of adultery, drunkenness, theft, or contempt of the communal court were publicly chastised. And we've already seen this, right? That you're allowed to publicly talk about somebody's sin, right? Again, I'm not doing this formally, halachically, and going through exactly why you can do this. But God uses it, and we're allowed to use it in halacha also. The truth is, this is true of all death penalties, right? Not all, right? Several of the death penalties, what comes afterwards? Laman, Yishmu, V'yirau, V'losifu, right? V'losifu. Oh, we do it publicly. We hang the people. And we do it at Yom Tov. Right, we do it the day before Yom Tov, right, when, or whatever, around Yom Tov, when people are in Yerushalayim, so everybody will see and everybody will know, so they won't do it. So, taking that as their license, Jewish communities would do this. If people were caught for sins, again, from adultery to drunkenness, right, they would shame them. How do you do this? So here, I just gave you his collection. He said, we find such an instance in the writings of Ramosha Mintz, right? The Mara Mintz, the son of Isaac Halevi Mintz, one of the most important rabbis in the Rhineland, who obliged his community to denounce one of his members who reneged on a monetary undertaking of a fellow Jew in the synagogue toward the end of the prayer service, right? Someone reneged on a monetary deal, he publicly humiliated him in shul. The objective of public criticism of the sinner is both to punish him and to warn the public that he's not trustworthy, right? That's another one of the toilet. Why do you use publicity? Why specifically publicity? Why don't you just beat the guy? Because you want to protect the community also, right? And the one, you want to educate the community, you want to punish, but you also want to protect the community from people could be dangerous. So similar practices were affected through placing the names of members of the community who had sinned on the synagogue notice board. In 1804, the community of Furth? Anyone know German? Sure. That, in Germany, placed the following notice on the wall of the women's section of the synagogue. On this tablet will be listed the names of women who dared to dance with men. I just had to include that, right? Okay. Similarly, right, mixed dancing was punished by the German community with public shaming. Similarly, a notice was posted about 6 years earlier in the city of Grodno.
Almost like an advertisement.
Okay, that's very 21st century. Okay, in the city of Grodno, Belarus, in which was written, here will be recorded the names of anyone who does not wish to take a poor visitor home for the Sabbath meal, right? They would use this to pressure people to take in guests on Shabbos, right? This was not something that the community were shy about. In other communities, such as Zolkiev in the Ukraine, such names were listed in the communal register. These registers, these pinkasim, were public minutes in which were documented important life cycle events, such as births, marriages, deaths, and communal events, such as the construction of communal buildings, disasters, epidemics, and pogroms. Right? This would be the list, right? Mazel Tov to Shlomo and Chani, whatever, on the birth of a grandson. Such and such is a shegit, and he's a cherub. There will be a meeting about the building of the new mikvah on Wednesday. Such and such is an evil human being. They're like, right? You would read the shul announcements, and it just, right, this is what they did.
Man, those announcements are a lot more interesting than
much more interesting than us, right? People would be much more attentive to announcements in shul if this is what we did, right? Just imagine Melech up there, Mazel Tov to such and such, Mazel Tov. and now we have to denounce such and such. You know, like the whole shul, all together now, right? But that's what we did, right? He said sometimes shaming was accompanied by a physical act. For example, the standing in the corner punishment, in which the wall of the synagogue, the synagogue was publicly denounced on one of the corners leading to the synagogue, usually the largest synagogue in town. He was bound to the wall of the synagogue by chains on his hands or around his neck in full view of the congregants as they came to services and then left. A record can be found in the Register of the Jewish Community in Krakow where this punishment was meted out to a member of the community found guilty of stealing money from many of his fellows, right? So we took Chayrim and then we played a bit with our creatively. There was another takana that was very common in Europe. It was called ikuv tefila. This was exciting. Okay, I would love to see this done in show. What was ikuv tefila? I gave you the summary of it, but this is how ikuv tefila would go. If somebody had a public grievance in the community, they would have a right to get up in the middle of davening. Usually before Kriyas HaTorah, and it was written to the bylaws of the community, they had the right to stop davening until their grievance was heard. Right? So you know how people are on Shabbos, right? They want to go home, right? They want to get to their children. They could just stop davening, right? And the whole community would have to discuss, and davening would not continue until the person was said that they were content, that either it had been resolved, or the community had made a plan for how they were going to deal with it after Shabbos. Right? That was called ikuv tefila, which is what I gave you here. Right? So this was again a creative way the community came up. But what did it do? It didn't just humiliate people. Right? Right? You were the reason. You became the reason that everyone's food was getting cold. Right? And everyone was hungry because someone would be allowed to get up in shul and say that person. Right? That person did blah, blah, blah to me, and I will not let davening continue until the community deals with it. Right? That was ikuv tefila. Now again, we would obviously have to go through, why is that mutter? And we have to go through lashon hara l'toeled, and we have to go through, right, all the general rules you want to go through. Right? Why it'd be mutter to embarrass people? But historically, it's clear that the poskim thought there were certain cases that met that bar, and they allowed this, they encouraged this. He continues, Pashkivilim, right? Shaming and exposures and public criticism, right? Pashkivilim is a well-established Jewish tradition, right? Right? What's a Pashkivil? Right? You know Pashkivilim. No. You've been to Mei Shearim. Those signs on every doorpost, that's a Pashkivil. That's an old... He said, but what do you think that is? What do you think that is? Right? That's before social media, right? What did you do? You had a... You know, you had a Pashkevil, right? Such and such is that. It's been used against very chashuva people, right? He has a whole discussion that I didn't give you. Why do they allow it? So again, I included some of the makaras just within the article for space, but there's a gemara in Yoma, Peivav Amud Beis, which says, Mefarsimin et hachanifin mipnei chilul Hashem. We publicize... So chanifin is a bit of a hard word to translate, but let me say, technically it means flatterers, right? But what it means is hypocrites, right? I mean, people who present themselves one way to the community, but in fact are not. And the halacha is mefarsim and chanifin v'nei chalashem. We're allowed to publicize them. Why are you allowed to publicize them? Lashon hara, embarrassing, blah, 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 blah. What's chilul Hashem? So it's some of the Rishonim, Rashi mentions this possibility, say it's theological. Right? Because what's the problem? Someone is a big tzaddik. Right? You think he's a big tzaddik and terrible things happen to him. And as we all know, theodicy is one of those things that shakes people at Muna. Right? Theodicy, meaning bad things happen to good people. So everyone sees him and says, oh, he's such a tzaddik. How are such good bad things happening to him? The emes is, he's a terrible human being. Oh, you're going to question God. It's going to be a chilul Hashem. So you're supposed to tell everyone that it's a sin. The Orchot Tzaddikim just says, no. Hypocrisy is a chilul Hashem, right? And Rashi says there's another problem. If someone comes across as a big chashuv rav, but in fact he's a low life. But if he puts on a good show, people become his students. They learn from him, right? There's a problem with people being hypocritical. So there is this notion, the Gemara, that mefarsim is chanifin, that when people are hypocrites, and that could lead to people going astray after them, or can lead to just chilul Hashem. We're supposed to publicize it. And that is sort of the ethos behind Pashkivilim, right? So taking all sort of this history together, and again, we have to obviously do this sugya properly. If we had hours and hours, we'd go through each category and we'd say, okay, how exactly do you fit all the exceptions of Lashon Hara and blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, right, that without getting into it, the point is Jewish communities, L'dorei Doros, have thought that you were allowed to, and definitely in the context of Beis Din, Beis Din had the right to say, this is L'toelet, this is beneficial, and to weaponize what would otherwise be Lashon Hara, to get people to do what they were supposed to do. That was what communities have always done. That's part of Chirim, plus all the creative punishments that people came up with. So they bring it then and now, right? The shaming dilemma on social media. So then what happened? The last few years, you know, the organization, ORA, right? The Organization for the Resolution of Agunot has become the master of this, right? That if someone is refusing to give a get, and a Beis Din says, this person has to give a get, he's being Masarev. Right, he's being Masarev. He's refusing to get when he's supposed to. So what do? They rally outside his house. They pressure his employers, right, to fire him. They post his information on social media. They pressure people to keep the cheirim, to not let him daven in shul. They kick him out of minyan. Right, whatever they can do, they use social pressure, including social media, to shame him. Now So what Suriel Rashi and what was his name, Chananel Rosenberg, point out is that that is just the logical extension of using modern tools for everything that we've always used. But it also has its own set of dangers. And they know that the modern discussions in Israel about the propriety of using these mechanisms sort of highlight the halachic issues that are involved. So that's what they write here. They said, using social media for shaming in cases of men refusing to grant a divorce is no longer the action of an individual, but has become institutionalized. This breakthrough occurred at the beginning of 2016 as part of legal proceedings of the Court of Israel's chief rabbinate. There have already been several hearings in the case of Dr. Oded Gwez, I don't pronounce that, a physics lecturer living in Israel, who refused to grant his wife a divorce for many years. Following several futile attempts to persuade the husband to divorce his wife, the rabbinical court published a particularly stinging ruling in which it asked the public to apply the ordinance of Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam had a specific set of chayrim-like practices that he encouraged for someone who was Masarev Get. Right? It's a subset of everything we've done. So when we talk about the chayrim-type things we do for someone who refuses to get, we talk about the Takan of Rabbeinu Tam, right? The chayrim of Rabbeinu Tam.
Are they more maskmer?
They're a bit more. Right. I mean, in effect, to excommunicate and ostracize him. But it's a set of chayrim. It's a version of chayrim. And this is what they wrote. It is incumbent on every Jewish man and woman and everyone associated with them not to have any dealings with him, whether in business or monetary matters, not to provide him hospitality, feed him, give him to drink, not to visit him when he's sick, not to seat him in the synagogue, and all the more so not to call him up to the Torah, not to let him say Kaddish, or the prayer for the departed, and all the more so not to lead the prayer service, not to ask how he is, not to give him any form of respect or honor until such time as he relents from being stiff-necked and listens to the words of the teachers and grants a divorce in Jewish law to his wife, and to free her from her marital chains. The rabbinical court did not limit itself to this declaration. It further supported the application of his spouse to publicize his photograph together with the rabbinical court ruling on social media, thereby contravening the original prohibition regarding publicizing his name and picture. According to Pinchas Tannenbaum, spokesman for the chief rabbi, the decision was taken with much pain, but there was no other choice. The rabbinical court does not publish advertisements and does not know the word shaming. However, in this case, the rabbinical judges felt that publicity on social media would be a more effective tool. The wife claimed that from her acquaintance with the husband, this was the right tool, and who should know better than her? These events have led to disagreements and wide-ranging discussion amongst rabbis and Jewish intellectuals to map out halachic rules for the use of shaming in a religious context by both individuals and religious institutions. Before we go farther, right, what we've seen is that it's clear that that social media shaming is the logical extension, right, of everything that has existed, charamim and takanos rabbeinu tam, and you know, and ikuv tefila and all that stuff. Which again, it's the exception. It is. But what dangers are there? Before we see what people actually said, why shouldn't you do it?
It's a lot different now than like in the shetel, where it's like just the Jewish, like the rule. This is the Jewish religious community, right? So everyone shames them together. But now, like it's not gonna. I would feel like with the, you can just kind of leave the religious community. And it won't be really in chayim anymore, right?
So one possibility, right, is that people say, well, so right, is the question of its effectiveness. But the truth is that what people say about social media is that no, Chayram lost its potency for many years because people could live the Orthodox community. Social media has brought Chayram back into vogue because it's very hard to leave the world entirely. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's what people point out. No, it's very effective. Why? He still hasn't given a get. Okay, so it's not, obviously. What? This is the one in Deal? The one to Deal? If this is the one who went to Deal? Or that was the second case? Whatever it was. This is in New Jersey. I think it's the same. Okay. No, now in Hanami, right, you can flee to Hungary, apparently. Shine. You can flee to Hungary. It's true. You know, it's, in a global world, it's very hard. But I don't know, because who cares? Because who's going to be in Hungary, right? But the truth is, right, that it's that social media has brought it back into, at least usually, making it more effective. Now, it's true, it doesn't always, but there were several celebrated cases where it did work, right? The Gittel Dodelson case, right? It worked, right? It was in the New York Times, right? She had an article published in the New York Times. It worked, right? You know, pressure was put on Art Scroll to fire the father of the person who was being Masarev Get, right? You know, and his uncle, who were both supporting him, right? I'm saying, and it worked, right? I mean, it was a very hard case because it was, right, one side was related to the colors and one side was related to the Feinsteins. So it was a very, right, political case. So they had to go outside the community, but it worked, right? There are celebrated cases where it does work. It doesn't work in every case, pashut, right? So I it's not going to be effective in every case, but neither, I assume Chayram wasn't effective in every case, right? How do you know? How do you know Chayram wasn't always effective?
Well, in this regard, we know because they also have to get some cattle prods up there.
Okay. No, that was not that case. Different case. Don't want to talk about that one. Right? Don't do that. Don't do electric cattle prod thing. No, don't do that. But how do you know Chayram didn't always work? Stam Chayram.
Not everyone follows the Chayram.
First of all, not everyone follows the Chayram. But also, what's the halacha? What's the last halacha of Ramzan Chayram?
Break his knee.
If he dies in Chayram, which means that there were certain people that till the day they died, they died in Chayram, right? As I push it, right? It's not always going to be effective. Nothing's going to be 100% effective, right? In a Hanami. But what else? What other problems are there? So one is Chil Hashem, is that the whole world sees it now, right? It doesn't stay internal. The whole world sees it, right? Now, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik used to say, right, that's true. The Gemara says, right, people say, don't publicize our dirty laundry because of Chil Hashem. But what does the Gemara say? Mefarsim as a chanithin mipnei Chil Hashem. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, yeah, the Chil Hashem is not the publicity that comes afterwards. The Chil Hashem, the person responsible for Chil Hashem is the one who's committing the crime, right? Who's being the manufal, right? It's not, don't tell me I can't publicize your crime because of Chil Hashem. If you think it's a Chil Hashem, then stop doing the crime. That's what the Gemara is telling you. But you're right, it is a concern. What else? So another concern that people say is, wait a second. What if...
Everyone can try doing it.
First of all, you might make a mistake, and it's very hard to undo a mistake. Right? And everybody might do it, right? Because it's one thing if the Besdin says it, right. But what if Vigilante, right, decides, right? And what if it's fake, right? You're opening a Pandora's box, right? There's a slippery slope here, right? So on the one hand, it might be effective. On the other hand, it's dangerous, and it's more dangerous, right? Once something's on the internet, it's very hard to, to ever get it back, right? So that's true. So this led to a discussion amongst Israeli rabbis. What do we do? Right? You're right. It can be that social media shaming is the extension of all those, but should we use it? Right? That's we still have to ask, should we use it or not?
Does Aura use the thresholds of any kind of conventional based in...
So that's what many people say, and we'll see that, is that certain people said, look, one easy way of doing it is saying, only use it when formal chayram would have been used, meaning once there's a psak from a bezdin, right? Because then it's checked off all the boxes, right? The bezdin has decided that this is the right thing. Don't allow a random person to use it, but say that it can be in bezdin's toolbox, right? And once Beis Din uses it, and that you'll see, that's what basically what Reb Stav says, right? Reb David Stav, the rabbi of the town of Shoham and the chairman of the Tzara Rabbinical Organization, right? He ran for chief rabbi a few years ago, contends the decision of the rabbinical court is a complex decision, right? The rabbinical court here took a very high risk by applying such a severe punishment, because embarrassing one's fellow in public is a very serious thing. So first of all, it's obviously, right, embarrassing people has to be taken with, right? Yeah, you have to take it seriously. We saw it's a very bad sin. Almost like spilling blood, and he has no place in the world to come. And therefore, the rabbinical court is obliged to give a convincing explanation as to why he's taking the step of shaming. Now, Reb Stav supports the rabbinical court in this specific case, if indeed it is an exceptional case, and then it is right and proper to respect it and correct to compliment it that it took such steps to reduce instances of refusal to grant divorces. However, in other cases, it would be better to sanction with imprisonment, which in Israel you can do for Siruf Get, notwithstanding that in terms of rabbinical court rulings, this is the most serious there is. It is interesting that Reb Stav's reasoning derives not only from the harm done to the one refusing to grant a divorce, but mainly from a concern that the moment shaming is used in one case, shaming is likely to be used in 20 more cases, over which distinguished rabbis who might think that it is or is not appropriate are not presiding, and therefore each would decide the law for himself. Right? So he said, right, so Reb Stav says he doesn't disagree with the specific case, but, right, the same way by Lashon Hara and by shaming people, we use it as a last resort. Both because it's terrible, right? And B, because we don't want it to be misused, he suggests using it in very limited circumstances, right? So that's the balance. On the one, now Chiram, as the Rambam tells you, is also it's a last tool. So he says, use it as a very last resort, just like we would Chiram. And Kal Vachomer, because this is global, right? So, you know, on the one hand, I think social media shaming is legitimate, and the point of this article by Rashi and Rosenberg was to point out that social media shaming is not new, right? It, like, Jews have been doing it forever, right? It is the logical extension of many mechanisms we've had, but that doesn't mean that there aren't counter pressures, right? And that, so therefore he says, his line would be, under certain circumstances, he would encourage Bat Din to have it in their arsenal, but realize the danger of bringing it into public discourse, because someone might use it when it's not, doesn't check off the boxes of Tohelet, isn't a formal Chayrem, right? It's just a rabbi who thinks someone in a shul is violating a sin. Hey, right? We'll announce it in shul every week, right? You don't want to open the, right? We'll send it out in the weekly by it email, right? The rabbi is drasha, and these are the people I don't like this week, right? You don't want to, not ever be choshesh that anyone buy it would do that. I'm just saying, right? Saying social media reconstitutes the effectiveness of rabbinical court social punishment, but in doing so grants access to such a strong tool to individuals who may not be bound by the seriousness of rabbinic court, as well to religious court judges who might be too hasty. In other words, Reb Stav's position is that the democratization of shaming obliges the rabbinical court to use the utmost caution using this tool, even more caution than was necessary in past practice. I warn against releasing the brakes suddenly, and from here, if someone does something we do not like, it is not a reason to embarrass him in public. Reb Stav also emphasizes that personally, I would not do something publicly until the rabbinical court had handed down a decision. Right? So he says, on the one hand, remember the chumrah of it, right? Remember the danger of it. On the other hand, he doesn't encourage not using it at all. His barometer is only if a Beis Din has issued it, and the dayanim have to realize that it should be a last resort, which, to be fair, that follows Chayrem, mm-hmm, with the recognition that this is in many ways worse than Chayrem and potentially more damaging than Chayrem, right? Potentially, right? And therefore, you should be very careful. Reb Chaim Navon, right? Similar position can be found in the words of Chaim Navon, a community rabbi of Modi'in, who has argued that shaming in social media is simply a return to the modern version of excommunications practiced by Jewish communities in the Middle Ages. Right? Once, when communities were communities, this is what communication looked like. Excommunication looked like effective social ostracism. Right? He said, this is what I said before, Chayrim was effective, became ineffective, and now has become effective again. Right? Rabbinical courts made measures, made measured use of it against various scoundrels. The weakening of the communities alongside social mobility decreased the effectiveness of this tool. For these reasons, someone ostracized or excommunicated simply showed contempt for the rabbinical court, or at the most, moved somewhere else and started over again. Social media, in fact, have restored the effectiveness of excommunication and returned it to what it was meant to be. However, exactly for this reason, Rabbi Navon stipulates the border between shaming sponsored by the rabbinical court and the personal shaming of internet surfers, which he considers lynch trenet?
Lynch trenet, like
Internet, yeah, but it was in Hebrew, so I don't know what that was originally. Lynchernev, someone just because I don't like him, or I suspect him, I don't like his opinions, or something, or he said something bad, that is a disgrace. Something completely different is to cooperate with the rulings of the rabbinical court, which checked out matters scrupulously before it determined on such a step. Right? So again, he thinks it can be used by a bezdin, because that provides the social control over it. However, right, there are certain people, like Rav Shurlo, and this is the next paragraph, who suggest that maybe, in very limited circumstances, it can be used not only in the context of Beznin. Now, why would you say this? So, he doesn't say this, but let me set a halachic model for this. Skip to 14. Okay? What is, if I asked you, summarize in one sentence the job of Bezdin? A sentence from the Torah. Be careful. Right, what is the one sentence that the Torah says? Why does Bezdin have to act? Three words. Uviarta hara mikirbecha. Right, get rid of. Right, the mandate of Bezdin is to get rid of evil. That's what it's supposed to do. Who do you think that obligation is incumbent on?
I would assume the Dayanim.
Right, you would assume the Dayanim. However, if you look at 14, Rashi says the following: Chulin Koflamatet. He says, "Uviar tahara mitzvah akol hapogeh b'chayve misa lavien lebezin kedei levar rishayim Yisrael." Rashi says, "Why does a witness have an obligation to testify and bring someone to justice? Because he's chayv because of uviar tahara mikirbecha." So Rav Asher Weiss in 15 says, "What do you mean? Isn't uviar tahara mikirbecha only on
judges?
The judges?" So he says, "No." He said there's a series of commandments that are really first level of defense is the court, is the communal institutions. Secondarily is on the community at large. He says Uviarta is one of those. Obviously the primary people responsible are Bezdin. But if you say it's only Bezdin, Bezdin won't get it very far, right? Because who's going to bring them to, right? Who's going to ensure the effectiveness? So therefore, Rashi tells you, yeah, the witness is coming. Is it also a kiyum of uviyarta ram mikirbech, of getting rid of evil? Right? He says, ukein mashkaz v'chinav, chalam mitzvah nanal. He gave examples before. And his proof is from what I just said, right? The Gemara and Rashi, skip down, that's just the Gemara and Rashi. Skip down to Rashi. Harela midivrei Rashi. It's one of the communal mitzvot. Even though the central obligation is the court, right? Everyone who can be involved has to be. If it weren't for Rashi, I would have said this is just the will of the Torah, right? A more generic will of the Torah, not a formal obligation. But still, it means that the Torah wants you to do it, to be involved in this process. The chivan shemitzvah haTorah laBezdin laVar Risham Yisrael. If the courts have to get rid of evil, pashut the kol echad chayv l'sayeh b'yad Bezdin l'kayim mitzvah do. Everyone needs to help. Right now, Rashi thinks it's a formal mitzvah. He said, formal or informal, the point is that everyone at some level has to be involved. Now, this opens a very dangerous, right, extension, which to say, maybe it's not only when Bezdin says it, maybe it's individuals. And this is where Shurlo goes. So go back to the article.
So Rashi is talking about assisting Bezdin.
Correct.
What they did.
Right.
Saying vigilantism.
Correct. But it opens the notion that sometimes what you think of as a court obligation is a bit more expensive. Now, you could say this means that once the court has issued a ruling, everyone has to listen to it. But it also opened the possibility that under limited circumstances, individuals can do it. But this is very dangerous, right? Because then you really get the lashon hara, embarrassing people, v'chulei. So then, what would you do? If you wanted, again, you might not want to, like Rustavin or Navon, but if you wanted to open up the possibility that under limited circumstances, with all the qualifiers, individual rabbis or individuals could take it into their own... What?
Into their own social media
accounts. Exactly. What guidelines would you give? Right. Assuming you don't want to say it's totally yes, sir, which you might want to, but let's say you didn't want to, what would you do?
Ask us to.
Okay, if you don't want to do that, right, you'd go back to Tewelet, right? You would say, okay, well, then we have to go back to the Lashon Hara models and say, what are the circumstances under which it is legitimate? And that's what Rav Shurlo tried to do. Again, you may not agree that it works, but this is the logical direction to take if you want to go in that direction. You may not want to, but if you want to go in that direction, that's what we do, and that's what he did. So, You look. Contrary to Rabbi Navon's position, one can find rabbis who specifically emphasize the responsibility of social solidarity of the individual in enforcement of ethical and religious norms, even using shaming on social networks. A typical example can be found in the words of Yuval Shurlo, an Israeli Rosh Yeshiva, head of rabbinical study seminary, and a member of the Helsinki Committee for Clinical Trials and Humans, other ethics committees. Fine. In his opinion, the ethical decision to use social media to write or share an embarrassing post is given to each person and not just to religious institutions. Right? Shurlo emphasized in the age of social media, the border between the individual and social institutions has been blurred, and sometimes the power of the individual to correct social wrongs is greater than that of traditional institutions, which accordingly obliges the individual to be part in this objective of fixing the injustice, and that it is the duty of the rabbis to lay down Jewish ethical rules and make them available to everyone. According to Rabbi Shurlo, the starting point of Jewish ethics concerning shaming via social media is not what is permitted, but rather what is obligatory, right? This is how I always like reframing it, right? Not when is it mutter, but when would you have to, right? What chiyuvim, right? Toelet isn't just a obligation. This is what the Piskei Tshuvos writes. It's a kiyum of lo zamen al dam reyecha under certain circumstances. So when is it obligatory? So Jewish people's Jewish ethics hold that the concept of the public's right to know is a distorted one. The public does not have a right to know everything about people's private lives. Jewish ethics does recognize the public's right to know, namely those things the public must know. It is an obligation to publicize them. It is not always easy to differentiate between the two, yet it is important that there should be a guiding light for one, for the one publicizing. In cases of injustice, standing shoulder to shoulder with victims or distributing information that should not be withheld to avoid harming people, there's an obligation to publicize that is incumbent on everyone. However, the risk of using shaming sometimes touches on the laws of life and death. Rashirlo stressed that this reminder applies to both sides, namely not just to the one about whom the shaming is publicized. It's true, since sometimes an overdose of harm may lead to actual questions of life and death, and words can kill. And this is how he tries to formulate his sort of balanced position between recognizing that he's opening a Pandora's box, but still trying to give some guidelines. And you'll see that what he's basically doing is modernizing the Chafetz Chaim's principles of Tohelet in a way that, right, we'll speak to a modern audience. This is what he writes. This is the quote. On the one hand, without dissemination of the required information, a tool in this fight has been lost. But on the other hand, there are many opportunities for manipulation and using the reader's good intentions for base purposes. Accordingly, it is worth using this tool as seldom as possible. And even so, according to the question of the Babylonian Talmud regarding slander, several principles can be stipulated for sharing the dissemination of shaming. Firstly, the reader of shaming must internalize that which he reads is not a fact, but a story or narrative of someone who is writing him something of which it is reasonable to assume that part is correct and part unclear, right? Meaning, right, this is what the way the Gemara says in Nida Samach Aleph, that under certain circumstances you have to publicize it because it might be necessary, but don't necessarily believe it. Choshesh mibay, right?
The listener,
right? Choshishin mibay, right? Meaning don't take everything you see as fact, but if it's necessary to be worried about it, take it into account. That's one. Secondly, the shaming reader must make an effort to hear the position of the other party, the wrongdoer, based on the injunction to rabbinical court judges, hear out your fellow and judge him righteously. Any reading of shaming-type publication is a quasi-judgmental exercise and requires making an effort to hear what can be known on both sides. Thirdly, the shaming reader must assess the necessity of disseminating these matters. Right? This is the Chafetz Chaim. Right? Is there any other way to do it? Right? Is this going to be effective? Is it going to be too damaging? Right? All those things. Right?
This is still the reader. I'm confused. Are you talking about the guy...
Publisher? Yeah, I mean it's both really. I mean it's both.
Is he saying as a disclaimer
before you click share? Like,
what? Yeah, so it's both. I mean it's, you know, I mean yes, he's focusing even on the reader, right? Is it the things you pass on are not helpful, right? Because he's talking about the reader who then passes on information, right? So it's really both, right? The line is very blurry. Mm-hmm. If the things you pass on are not helpful, it's prohibited to convey them. If what you publicize is necessary to deal with wrongdoing, as it appears as far as possible, you're obliged to pass it on, stating, "Be advised that I'm conveying information that I do not know to be correct, but is important to pass on. Decide for yourself or similar." So he said, what do you have to do? Basically take the rules of Tohelet, right? Which are, try to only pass on information you know to be true. But if not, sometimes the Gemara says, you have to pass on information that might or might not be true. If you're going to do that,
disclaimer.
Right, make a disclaimer, make it clear. Weigh out how damaging is it going to be. Is it going to be more damaging than it's worth? Right? So what he's basically trying to do is modernize the Tohelet discussion. Now again, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous.
Kind of sounds like he's like accepting that there's going to be lots and lots of incorrect usages. That's why he's saying the readers and before you pass
the reader, the publisher, everybody. Correct. But again, I don't think so. We're going to end here. But I don't think this obviously exhausts the sugya. What I think it opens up, right, is the extent to which the use, especially in limited circumstances, by Beis Din as a continuation of policies that have existed in the Jewish community for a very long time. But on the other hand, sort of the counterweights of Lashon Hara and embarrassing and things like that have to be taken into account. And if you think, even if Beis Din's going to use it, you have to be careful. But Kal Vachomer, if you're going to take Rav Shirlo's position, that you can use it sometimes non-Beis Din, so then you have to go back to the principles of Tohelet and modernize them, understand what that means when you're using it in a social media context and realize the stakes that are there, it's possible to do it. I'm not convinced that it's a good idea. I'm not convinced it's going to work. But you see how the poskim who are dealing with it are struggling to recognize, on the one hand, yes, social media the use of social media can very effectively continue mechanisms that have existed in halacha for a long time, but its potency is such that you really need to think carefully before you actually use it and go back, not necessarily to the letter of the law, because it's hard to find letter of the law of social media shaming, but the spirit behind the principles that have guided similar policies, and try to modernize it. So I think it's helpful to see how poskim are bringing the conversation to the table, even if they haven't yet sort of come down with concrete things, how they're starting to bring it into conversation with ancient institutions, modernizing them to use them in effective ways, but recognizing the unique dangers of the modern mechanisms that weren't true of the classic ones. Okay.